Good afternoon. It's Tuesday, the 24th of January 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish. With me in the studio, of course, Mike Robinson. Well, as always, in the few minutes leading up to the news, we're chatting amongst ourselves. Clearly, things are unfolding very fast, and I was intrigued to be told last night, anecdotal, but about a military gentleman who went into Downing Street some 16 years ago, John Major's time, whatever that was, to hear John Major talking about destroying the institutions. And our conversation before the news today was that seems to be exactly where we are.
So let's get right to it. Of course, everybody will have heard by now that Lord Neuberger and the other Supreme Court justices have upheld the or they've removed the appeal against that the government was bringing against the earlier judgment on Article 50. So government has lost. Supreme Court has published apparently 43,000 words in their judgment. That's pretty good going. But in a nutshell, what have they done? They've said that the government is required to pass an Act of Parliament before invoking Article 50. But they said that the devolved governments have no say in this process, aside from whatever representatives that each of the devolved so-called nations have in Parliament. So unsurprisingly, the usual chaos, chatter and infighting has begun on social media, and it is all a diversion. Article 50 is going to be triggered, and at the end, we will definitely still be fully integrated with the European Union, and in fact, more so than we are today, Brian.
Always the plan, Mike.
Absolutely. So what at number 10? Well, here's what Lord Neuberger said. In broad terms, Article 50 provides that a country wishing to leave the EU must give notice, quotes, in accordance with its own constitutional requirements. And again, that's what they were ruling on. And while that might be inconvenient for some, it shouldn't really be of a fear for anybody if we believe in the democratic process.
Didn't we have some sort of democratic process where 17 million people said we should come out of the European Union?
That's absolutely true. Now, a number 10 spokesperson said the Prime Minister's speech last week very clearly set out the government's objectives. Well, we're going to talk about that in just 1 second. They also said it's important to remember that Parliament backed the referendum by a margin of 6-1 and has already indicated its support for getting on with the process of exit to the timetable we've set out. We respect the Supreme Court's decision. We'll set out our steps to Parliament shortly. And so they're going to have to put a bill before Parliament. And there's great concern, Brian, that this bill might only consist of 2 lines. And of course, it was Kenneth Clark, who the ex-Bilderberg Steering Committee member, still a member of Parliament, who expressed it by saying that, you know, what the government is trying to do is to minimise discussion. They're going to try and have a bill with 2 lines in it and just sort of shoo it through. And that seems to be what the government is intending. Tim Farron, he spoke up. He said he welcomes today's judgment, but he said, we demand a vote of the people on the final deal. And without that, we will not vote for Article 50. Right. But Brian, this is nonsense because Theresa May, in her speech last week, said, I can confirm today that the government will put the final deal that is agreed between the UK and the EU to a vote in both houses of Parliament before it comes into force. So she has already stated in a speech last week that that's exactly what she's going to do. But Tim Farron clearly maybe wasn't there that day or wasn't paying attention or something. But he seems to think that he's not going to vote for Article 50 unless such an undertaking is given, even though it already has been.
Well, the big insult from the Lib Dems, and I'm ashamed I haven't got it with me at the moment, but they've been pushing leaflets through local doors, which tell people that, you know, their local Lib Dem councillor recognises that people voted to come out of the European Union, but they didn't really understand what they voted for, but not to worry because Tim Farron was going to ensure that there was a vote where people would understand what they voted for, but didn't in the first place.
Oh, he's going to do that.
I'm really not sure, but I think he's going to use the same sort of efficient, effective policy as he's used to trace the 324 missing Syrian children that he was happy to admit had probably been trafficked, abused, possibly dead. These are the children that Britain said we would look after them. Tim Farron informed of the missing children, not really interested. So can we trust him on what he says over Brexit? Don't think so. Where do we go from here? I think we have to come into the subject of news and fake news. And of course, we've now got to the stage in Britain where we're not even sure whether the mainstream reports over what's happening around Brexit are themselves accurate. And this requires that all of us need to be very astute in what we're picking up, what we're believing. Well, what's the priority for the BBC? Well, of course, it's fake news. And this is some of the trashier BBC fake news. But this was a tweet, and it was about the potential cancer risk from cooked or burnt toast. So we had a little look at their article. There's quite a lot of it. There's a lot of words on the page. But the key bit was, what's the risk? Research in animals has shown that the chemical is toxic to DNA and causes cancer. This is a chemical created by bringing foods to high temperature. So scientists assume the same is true in people, although as yet there is no conclusive evidence. So this is a complete BBC fake news fear story, which is based on absolutely nothing.
Yes.
We could say, what is this designed to do? Well, of course, it's designed to make people fearful of cancer. People put toast in the toaster, and in the back of their heads is the little BBC subliminal message, if I eat this overcooked toast, I am going to get cancer.
Well, just before you go on, in fairness, it should be pointed out that this was yesterday's news. Today's news is that baby food causes cancer as well on the same basis.
Right. So BBC doing no proper investigative research into why we haven't got any cancer cures. In fact, many people say we have. But if you dare say that and produce a product, then, of course, you're in danger of being imprisoned under the 1944, I think it is. 32 Cancer Act. So the BBC doesn't want to get into all this money being taken to try and find a cure for cancer. They just like to ramp up the fear. But it gets worse. So bring on the squirrel. Now, these are particularly dangerous creatures. The BBC is here with squirrel threat to critical infrastructure. This is not a joke. This is £3.65 billion of British Broadcasting Corporation factual media. And here's the headline, that the squirrels are basically damaging critical infrastructure all over the world. Power outages, people left homeless, people unable to overcook their food to give cancer.
Eating
through railway lines. It's all on the squirrel. And of course, let's remember that alongside the BBC, the Daily Telegraph wrote an article blaming beavers and ground squirrels in Siberia for creating global warming. So what I've put at the bottom is that the British public is being fed this utter dross news by the BBC. Why are they doing it? Because if we take the time to look into the background, we can see what the BBC is really doing. And I'm back on the subject of BBC Media Action, the BBC's political charity. This is yet more of their own documents, where they are talking about their action inside Syria to promote regime change. So the British public gets fed complete dross. I wish I could use another adjective for that, but it's the UK column news, so I'll stick at dross. Meanwhile, what is the BBC doing? It's basically subverting other nation states to impose BBC values in those sovereign nation states. So presumably, if BBC achieves regime change in Syria, the Syrian children are going to be taught that squirrels are causing global warming and eating through power lines to cause major worldwide problems.
Yeah, but if it's Syria, it must be ISIS squirrels.
ISIS squirrels. We can laugh, Mike, and we do. But of course, this is very, very serious. This is fake news. and it is propaganda being used to deceive the nation by the BBC.
Okay, something else I'm sure everybody's heard about by now, but let's fill in some of the details. Bye-bye TPP. So Donald Trump has passed an executive order which is abolishing TPP, at least as far as the United States is concerned. And this is following his campaign pledge on exactly that. He said, "We are going to stop this ridiculous, these ridiculous trade deals that have taken everybody out of our country and taken companies out of our country." Well, we have to wait and see whether he is actually going to stand by those words, of course, because what he said is we're going to stop the ridiculous trade deals. Well, Theresa May is going to be there in Washington meeting Donald Trump on Friday. And of course, what is she going to be bringing? A ridiculous trade deal to put in front of him. So we'll see how sincere he is about that after Friday. The mainstream media pretty upset about the fact that Trump has done this. And here's Owen Jones here in The Guardian. Typical of the thing, he says that Trump has any ownership over the TPP, over TPP is a travesty and a damning indictment of the democratic establishment. The new president's right-wing populism combines xenophobia, protectionism and policies which directly enrich the Donald Trump class. If the Democrats had listened to the likes of Bernie Sanders and other progressives who oppose trade deals which benefit corporate elites at the expense of workers' livelihoods, the United States might not be currently embroiled in one of the worst crises since its foundation.
Did they lend him out of school to write that report?
I don't know. That might have been his homework.
He's got his school sweater on.
Yes. He said nothing that Trump does is motivated by the interests of the average American, and so on. You can read it for yourselves. The headline is Trump didn't kill TPP, the people did. Unfortunately for Owen Jones, Bernie Sanders has come out in support of what Trump has done. And he said, now is the time to develop a new trade policy that helps working families, not just multinational corporations. If President Trump is serious about a new policy to help American workers, then I would be delighted to work with him. So poor old Owen Jones there. But anyway, in the meantime, the Spectator, this is a couple of days ago, but I thought we'd highlight it. Will Donald Trump be assassinated, ousted in a coup, or just impeached? What a headline. Fantastic.
And of course, if we or alternative media produce this sort of headline, I think you would get somebody knocking on the door.
Yeah, quite possibly. So this was written by Paul Wood, who's a British journalist. And he said, he began by quoting Alexander Hamilton from 1788, saying the most deadly adversaries of Republican governments arise chiefly from the desire in foreign powers to gain improper ascendant in our councils. How could they better gratify this than by raising a creature of their own to the chief magistracy of the Union? So he's basically trying to invoke Russia again, because, of course, Russia is the only reason that Trump is there in the first place, according to most.
Well, Russia's to blame for everything.
Absolutely. And he said that, while almost no one in Congress is talking about impeachment, he does mention Maxine Waters, who's a Democrat, who is one of the few, apparently, who's discussing the possibility of impeachment. And he says that, conversations in Washington have taken on a hallucinatory quality. Impeachment, however far-fetched an idea, is not the most outlandish possibility being discussed in this town as the 45th president is sworn into office. And he even mentions Alex Jones and Alex Jones's warnings of assassination and so on. So really, the mainstream media continue to get pretty hysterical about this whole thing.
I think they're at the point, Mike, where they don't actually know what to do or what to say, because for them, the whole thing is just so horrific that there's been this huge swing. We're obviously going to watch Trump very carefully, but there's this huge swing. Common sense has come to the fore. Whether it gets enacted or not, we don't know. But one of the statements that I really listened to with Trump was when he said, "And we're not even educating our children in the American schools." And of course, what we've seen is this massive attack on proper education in UK and the US.
Yes.
Mainstream media frightened.
Mm. Okay. The 2017 fraud barometer is out. This is from KPMG. And they are particularly concerned that the value of UK fraud brought to court, cases brought to court, has broken the £1 billion barrier for the first time in 5 years. And this is because of what they're describing as a resurgence in super cases. And this is super cases are cases where the alleged fraud is £50 million or more. And this is apparently the first time since 2011 that fraud has reached these levels. The volume of fraud dropped, the number of frauds, that is, dropped by nearly a third from the previous report, which I think was 2015. So it's dropped to 220 cases as opposed to 310, but the value was up from £732 million to £1.1 billion. And so the average value of the fraud has more than doubled to £5.2 million. That's the average. And they are saying KPMG is saying that the figures for 2016 tell us two things. Firstly, that we can expect more of these super frauds as challenging economic circumstances place pressures on businesses and individuals, and as technology becomes more sophisticated, because, of course, cybercrime was right at the heart of this, because we've got to be particularly concerned about the Russians, who are,
responsible
us all
for everything.
The time for using their computers. So I don't think KPMG is particularly focusing on the Russians, but that, this is the inevitable outcome.
Well, I've got a simple answer to this one, Mike, is I can go back, whatever it is, 10, 15 years, we take a city, Plymouth. What was coming to light was public money, mainly grant money coming in for regeneration or European regeneration money coming into the city that was clearly being divided up into little pots. You could say squandered, you could use that description, but many people in the city thought that this was fraudulent use of what was essentially public money. But when people took action and reported it, absolutely no response either from the local council or the police. Now, if that was just Plymouth, maybe this city was one off. But of course, when this was reported over the internet, what happened is that people from other cities started to come forward talking about massive fraud and corruption within their particular councils. And yesterday we were talking about Sheffield and Mr. Bob Kerslake. And of course, what happened in Sheffield is that OLAF, the organisation from the EU, which is supposed to investigate fraud, was called in to see what had happened to large amounts of EU funding in Sheffield. And they did, according to people on the ground, a brilliant job of covering up the whole thing. So whether it was Sheffield, London, Glasgow, Liverpool, Newcastle, these reports of fraud and corruption all across the UK, what was the point of allowing the fraud and corruption? Well, of course, this allowed you to bribe and control people. So many people said the EU funding was designed to bring in the fraud and corruption. And who was the EU representative who was going to stop it? None other than Mr. Kinnock, who did absolutely nothing, even when the EU Commission had to resign.
And of course, that type of fraud is not included in this report at all.
No.
This report's only talking about fraud which has been brought to court, which is the very tip of the iceberg.
Tip of the iceberg. So I suppose the other fraud you could call that sort of rebel fraud, that's good fraud.
Yeah.
As opposed to terrorist fraud, which would be bad fraud.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, clear. On the subject of terrorists, possibly fake news, you can make of this what you like, but the Mirror, which says now it's an intelligent newspaper, is pointing us at Facebook to read what it warns is propaganda, just in case you weren't sure. And if you go to the Mirror site, ISIS reveal first deadly Reaper drone bomber that mimics US military craft in sick propaganda footage. Quite a mouthful there. Let's have a look at the craft. Here it is. Now, I'm going to say this is essentially an aeroplane-type drone. And why I'm interested in that is because it's got forward speed. This is not a beast for hovering. And yet we are to believe in the video that you can watch at your peril, because it's propaganda, shows them dropping a bomb on Iraqi forces, I think somewhere close to Mosul. Now, what we're particularly interested in is who funded the drone, because apparently it's very close to an American-style drone. an MQ-9, according to the Mirror. But as we're about to see, it seems that the Department for International Development is big in drones.
Yes, but what this does make clear is yesterday's news for why we need aircraft carriers to deal with ISIS.
When they've got planes, Mike, the only trouble with Britain's aircraft carriers at the moment is that they are aircraft carriers, but we haven't yet got the aircraft to go on them. But don't worry, because we will have some, and then we'll have a second aircraft carrier that will have no aircraft because there's no aircraft. Probably good news for ISIS. So here we are. Let's go to the page of UK against Daesh. And we're very interested in this post. It says the UK was one of the first to step up with help for people. Mosul, we sent food, shelter, medical care and clean water. So the Department for International Development doing all the good things to help people in the world. So there's the aid. But if you don't take the British aid, then DFID clearly indicating that what you're going to get is a drone attack.
Yes.
Or were they using the drones to drop the aid? I don't know.
It's getting difficult, isn't it?
Reality is getting very difficult. And, of course, this is your favourite lady, Miss Patel.
Yes.
She's very trustworthy. Let's have a look at her over here. So what are we interested in? Well, we're interested in the fact that we've got the Department for International Development helping people, food, shelter, medical care and clean water. Unfortunately, we've been pointing out that what they've also been doing is funding the BBC. Of course, that couldn't be the BBC direct, so it's done through their proxy charity, BBC Media Action. A mere 14.7 million showing up on BBC Media Action funding, I think, for last year. So what's going on here? Well, the Department for International Development says it's pushing out a five-year global grant, and BBC Media Action is able to benefit from this. It's helping better governance, healthier populations, and an increased ability to cope with humanitarian crises. So this is the same government that has reduced UK to what must be close to a shambles. We can't even run our own healthcare in UK, but don't worry, because the British government is providing the BBC with nearly £15 million to get into other countries to help them have the same standard of care that we've got in Britain.
I'm sure they'll be delighted to receive it.
I'm sure they would. So if you don't believe this, go and do your own research. But let's have a look about what the department says. It leads the UK's work to end extreme poverty. We're tackling the global challenges to our time, including poverty and disease, mass migration. They've stopped that completely, Mike.
Absolutely.
Hardly been a trace of it. Insecurity and conflict. And their work is building a safer, healthier, more prosperous world. We can't manage Britain, but we're doing a more prosperous world. And this is part of the analysis of the Department of International Development for work carried out by BBC Media Action. And they have been putting in media and communication support to help governance, healthier populations. So let the BBC into your country and you're going to be healthier. This is true. This is absolutely true. So we'll stick on the subject. DFID, they've also been at work in Somalia. And if you want to believe these statistics, and I absolutely don't, it says that they put in 94 million in 2013-14. 4,000 women benefited from legal aid. Don't know what the cases were, Mike, but they were very lucky women. 4,300 women were provided with contraceptives, and they've created 56,900 jobs. So we can't create jobs in Britain, but don't worry, because getting the Department for International Development to Somalia, and it's all coming good.
Yeah.
So let us also remember that the BBC intimately involved with EU foreign policy. So this is a screenshot from EU External Action. This is a front end of EU foreign policy. And we were intrigued to see Mogherini. You're very keen on her, Mike. the High Priestess of the EU, and she's been talking out about Syria and defence. But let's remember that this is the same organisation promoting the work of BBC Media Action and funding them to €2.4 million. So BBC, totally independent, except when it's promoting EU policy. So here she is, and according to that website, she's been in Davos driving forward Syria initiative and EU defence cooperation. Both of them in the same couple of paragraphs, which is exactly what David Ellis has been talking about. So let's have a look at it here. She met a lot of people. Iran's foreign minister was involved, UN special envoy for Syria. Nobody from Syria itself, but we have other people who know. It said the initiative launched late last year aims to identify with regional partners common ground on the post-conflict arrangements for Syria and examine the scope for reconciliation and reconstruction once a credible political transition is firmly underway. That's regime change.
Yes.
So the EU pushing regime change, they're happy to have BBC Media Action working for them because, of course, the BBC must be trying to help get rid of Assad as well. So she also took part in panels on the responsible leadership in a multipolar world. I keep reading bipolar there for some reason, and on promoting stability in the Middle East, and in a public discussion with NATO Secretary Stoltenberg on redefining Europe's security agenda. So lovely package, Syria and the EU military all in one place. And she said security is a priority for the EU. We've hard and soft power. We've done more on defence in the last 7 months than in decades, building on the ideas in her global strategy for EU foreign and security policy. Mogherini has illustrated the European Union's three-pronged set of measures to strengthen the EU's security and defence capability. In a reshaping world, the only way for the Europeans to be global players is through the EU. And of course, we better add that Theresa May completely lying to the British nation at the moment, because she is locking Britain's defence into Mogherini's European defence as we speak.
Absolutely. Okay. Neighbourhoods, neighbours, near neighbours. This is an interesting little project. Here's their website. It's called Near Neighbours. Lots of common purpose purple on there. Well, is that a coincidence? Let's find out. They've just received another £210,000 in funding from the British government. That might not seem like a large amount of money, but this is an interesting little project, and I want to have a look at who's behind it and what it might be doing. So funding is to be shared among a number of Near Neighbours projects, and this is managed by the Church Urban Fund. Near Neighbours apparently brings together diverse communities and different faiths through a range of activities that improve their lives and the local community in which they live. So that sounds very good. The first projects to benefit from the new funding include those improving employability through basic literacy and numeracy classes, and bringing communities together in unique ways to build personal skills. They're going to have local workshops, all kinds of stuff. So the Minister for Faith and Integration, Lord Bourne, said, Near Neighbours has a great track record in encouraging individuals from different backgrounds and faiths, cultures to come together, build understanding and make their neighbourhoods even better places to live. So this sounds fantastic. And this funding boost will help Near Neighbours projects to support individuals to develop basic skills and support projects to encourage greater community integration. But I wonder, is that really what's going on? Because what he was actually saying is that different backgrounds, faiths and cultures are going to build a common purpose, is what I think is what that means.
This is quite remarkable, Mike, because as you're reading through it, what is in my mind is our article on BBC Media Action subversion from Broadcasting House to Kazakhstan. And in that article, we were talking about them using soap opera type thing, Neighbours, in order to help get their agenda into society. It's like they've gone overseas, they've trialled it on the Syrians or the in Kazakhstan or other places, and now having trolled it, they're going to use it on us.
Well, I believe that's it's the same type of operation. It's couched, of course, in training and employability and bringing different religions and faiths together, but I believe that's exactly what's going on. Now, the chairman of the Board of Trustees of this organisation is Baroness Margaret Eaton. There she is on screen. She is a life peer in the House of Lords. She was a councillor, or may still be a councillor, with Bradford Metropolitan Borough Council since 1986. She was head of the Local Government Association between 2008 and 2011. While she was at Bradford, she produced this document, the Bradford District Online Community Cohesion Plan. So she's clearly been into community cohesion for a very long time, and she likes community cohesion because you bring lots of people together and it brings the community into one group, a tight bond is built or not. In the foreword, which she wrote, here it is: our vision is of a district which everyone can prosper. Our vision is of a district in which there is respect and tolerance between the diverse communities within the district. Our vision is of a district in which the responsibilities of being a Bradfordian are widely accepted. So here we go with the responsibilities thing again. You don't get any rights until you've met your responsibilities. Our vision is of a district where everyone can take part in the public affairs of the district, except if you're just an individual, then you can't take part. If you want to take part, you've got to be a member of an organisation of some kind.
Or a club, or an NGO, or a charity.
Exactly. Yeah. Of course, she said, this outlined community cohesion plan describes part of that journey towards our vision. And so they had a bunch of actions and achievements. This is going back to 2001, 2002. And what I have ringed there on screen is the creation of a Youth Common Purpose Programme, Your Turn. So here we have the link between this lady herself, Common Purpose, and the type of thinking that Common Purpose represents. She was absolutely keen to promote that as much as possible. I believe she's still promoting that in the Near Neighbours programme, and community cohesion is not really what it's about at the end of the day.
I think it's the opposite, Michael. Yes. I think this is about utterly breaking communities apart. You say you're bringing them together, but actually what the facilitators do is break them apart. And of course, our political charity, Common Purpose, master at this, creating these future leaders which are going to help society. But if you follow the trail along, highly elitist, highly political, people being reframed. If you don't agree with their agenda for that society, you're not in the club and you're not going to be allowed to play. So this is really in it. And of course, the courses that they bring in are going to be full of NLP to get people reframed into their way of thinking.
Now, if you think we're putting two and two together and getting five, you need to get on the UK Column website. Read, there's a series of articles called The Common Purpose Effect. You need to read those. And also, in particular, to read the NHS article, Towards a Million Change Agents. Try to get a handle on what it is we're speaking about here, because if you want to understand why your communities are breaking down, that's what you've got to get grips with.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things I just picked up as you were speaking, Mike, is the language, the vision. This is a key part of the reframing language. And these individuals, these initiatives always work in the future. So basically, it doesn't matter whether everything's chaos now. It doesn't matter whether there's breakdown, fraud, corruption, violence now, because in the future, at some time, society will be taken over the rainbow, transformed into this new perfect utopia. So these are very, very dangerous people. You read the words, there's no substance to it, but it's always pointing at in the future it will be okay. Well, if Theresa May is helping to bring our communities together, of course she's doing a brilliant job by helping to crack down on child abuse. Now, I make no apology at all for the fact that we will not drop the issue of Melanie Shaw. We are still loyal to all the other people who've been affected by child abuse. However, there are some things happening around the Melanie Shaw case which are just outrageous. And I want to remind people, of course, that Melanie Shaw is still in prison, still in solitary confinement. Why is she there? Because of the actions of our present Prime Minister, Theresa May, in her post of Home Secretary. She was the woman who made the decisions with the Crown Prosecution Service. She is the person that put Melanie Shaw in prison. Now, somebody has been doing some very good research, and what we're calling up on screen is guidelines how prisoners should be treated. So this is part of Prison Service Order 2700-1. And what is it saying? It's talking about segregation. It says prisoners who are at risk of suicide or self-harm must not be routinely held in the segregation unit. And Melanie Shaw has never talked about suicide, but she has self-harmed. She's now nearly 10 months in a segregation unit. What does segregation unit mean? Solitary confinement, which is defined by the United Nations as torture. So that's the first rule. It's also goes on to say that a mental health assessment should be undertaken. And it says special consideration should be given, let's call that up on screen, should be given to prisoners who are segregated under the various rules. The risk of locating the prisoner in a single cell in these circumstances should be considered. So there is a whole lot of rules and regulations about the care needed for very vulnerable prisoners. Melanie falls into that. She has had a lifetime of medication in order to cope with the post-traumatic stress. That medication has been denied when she was in HM Prison Peterborough. It's been denied in HM Prison Foston Hall, and she has been left in solitary confinement with no day-to-day relationship with other prisoners. Here's another order, 4,800, and again, you can freeze the screen to have a look at this one. We can expand a bit of it for you. What is it saying? Well, first of all, it's saying that research shows that over a half of self-harm incidents in prisons nationally are carried out by women, yet women account for only 6% of the prison population. And then going on to gender-specific guidance, all staff should receive training to understand why women may self-harm. And it says, where possible, women should be out of their room cells. Where they have to be locked up, they must have access to activities that can help to distract them from their problems. These activities can be simple craft-based activities such as cross-stitch or knitting. But basically, the last thing you do with vulnerable prisoners is lock them up in solitary confinement. So the prison is aware of this. The prison inspection organisation is aware of this. The Crown Prosecution Service is aware of it. Theresa May is aware of it. This is the deliberate torture of Melanie Shaw. Why? Because of her knowledge of child abuse and murder at Beechwood Children's Home in Nottingham and other homes. And the most important thing is the connection with senior members of British Parliament. Now, you would have thought that this gentleman would be, sympathetic, I think. We will remember Mr. Danzuk MP, because at one stage he was speaking out very strongly about child abuse, and particularly the abuse of children within the framework of Westminster and the British establishment. It all went a bit wobbly. He was then highly attacked by the press. But many people had a great deal of time for this gentleman because of his courage. I'm going to say courage, Mike, in speaking out for the victims of child abuse. Now, I've added the word yuck to the title. That's not actually a typo. But there's something very, very unpleasant going on here. And what is it? Well, let's have a look. Because Melanie wrote to this man while she was in prison, and he responded. Now, before I show you, because it's probably difficult to read that letter on screen, I'm just going to read a bit of what Melanie has been saying to us. She's been saying, thank you for your support and help, and that the viewers. I feel totally alone, but the support and cards from viewers keeps me strong. She says, court was hell. I was led to believe I was going to be freed as I was time served. but she's now banged up again. I got 2 years. I daren't speak in prison again. And this is one of the things she's saying. If she speaks out to defend herself or talk about why she's there, then they come down on her like a ton of bricks. She says, I've been left destitute for my opinions, lost my home and have no contact with my son. And this one I found particularly vile. She says the judge called her a narcissist. So this woman who's had the bravery to speak out as an abuse victim herself, to highlight what's going on, even the judge attacks her. And of course, Melanie not even brought into court to defend herself. She has to try and defend herself via a Skype link that was being manipulated either by the court or the prison so that she was cut off. And this has happened on more than one occasion. So we're going to make as much as we can of this communication public. I have Melanie's approval to do that. Now let's have a look at what Mr. Danzuk had to say. So this is the background. We've got Melanie, child abuse survivor, whistleblower. She's been threatened, bullied, spent over 9 months in solitary. She's been denied medication. She's been stripped in front of other prisoners and humiliated. She's been denied visits, denied letters. Stamps are not passed through to her. She's denied interaction with other prisoners, denied a proper trial. Her home has been taken. Her possessions have been put into storage prior to disposal. And she's denied contact with her son. And Melanie says in her letter, for speaking out, I've been made destitute. So having written to Mr. Danzuk, what did he say to Melanie? It was this. I hope you had as good a festive season as you can have in the circumstances. I also hope your son is well and that you will soon get to see him. I find this letter obscene, Mike. I really can't think of another word. We have an MP who's fully aware of what is going on in the wider abuse of circles around Westminster and the establishment. And this woman has suffered this. And he says, well, basically, you might have been in solitary and being beaten up in prison, but I hope you had a good Christmas. Are our politicians on drugs? What are we seeing here? This is some form of cognitive breakdown with our MPs, Mike.
Yeah, particularly an MP that in the past has had close links with abuse and so on. And, you know, as a supporter of abuse victims, he pretends.
Pretends.
Yes.
Right. And of course, earlier in the news today, we showed an image of Kenneth Clark. He's very big on the world stage, speaking out for the Bilderbergers, speaking out for Britain, speaking out for justice. We haven't yet seen Kenneth Clark come forward to help tackle this issue of child abuse, which is clearly reported in not just Beechwood Children's Home in Nottingham, but I think it was 8 other homes listed by Nottinghamshire police as being also sources of child abuse.
And of course, he is a Nottingham MP.
Well, so one would have thought that Kenneth Clark would have been one of the first to step forward. Let's see what's really going on here. Let's ask the questions and let's start dealing with the child abuse. But we come back to Theresa May. Melanie Shaw can only have arrived in prison. You know, that had to take place with the full knowledge and connivance of our Prime Minister, Theresa May. Theresa May said publicly she abhorred child abuse. This woman is a despicable hypocrite. And of course, if we've got some overseas viewers and you're thinking of dealing with Britain in the near future, can you trust a Prime Minister who is prepared to imprison a child abuse victim and whistleblower? Mm. And I think the answer to that has got to be no. I don't think we can follow any other subjects after that, Mike. If I sound passionate, I absolutely am. It's up to us to get the lid off what's happening here. And of course, we need the thousands of UK column viewers that we've got to take action, to get those letters in to Theresa May, get them to her local constituency office. so that the local Conservatives who voted for this lady know what's really going on in the background. Take the battle to her, of course, polite, measured, submit the evidence, but get it into her local area, because that is the only place that these people seem to be concerned at public attitude. 17 million people vote to come out of the European Union. Theresa May doesn't give a stuff. She is busy working in the background to lock us into the European military, as revealed by David Ellis on many of UK Columns news programmes. That's it. Thank you for joining us. We will be back at the same time tomorrow. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.